The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay. You're tuning in to Therapy in a Nutshell here on KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. This is Dr. Patty, and I have a special guest in the studio that you'll meet in a couple sections here. And we are talking about social anxiety. And the reason I wanted to bring this up now, I just think a week before Christmas, is that I hear this in my office a lot. I hear it all the time, but when it becomes what a lot of people think of as party season, holiday season, you have your office party, you've got family get-togethers, you've got all sorts of stuff you have to go to, and I hear all the time, I hate this, I don't want to. I also hear some version of, okay, I'll go, but I'm leaving early. And so I hear all the way from, oh, I don't like this, but I'll go, to I am totally having a panic attack about having to go. So for a second, let's look at the idea of social anxiety as a spectrum, okay? Because I often talk about lots of things as a spectrum. But let's take social anxiety from all the way really mild, where it's just a little bit of a, oh, I am not a party person. There's going to be 50 people there. I don't want to go. And it's just mild. All the way to almost a panic attack, I can't go, almost an agoraphobic sort of thing of I'm not going to be able to leave the house because I'm going to get dizzy and pass out and leave my body and be a chocolate mess on the front porch because I made myself walk through the front door. Okay, so look at it as a spectrum. Many, many people that I talk to have this social anxiety very mild. And I wouldn't even formally diagnose them on a DSM-5 scale, a psychological evaluation scale of you meet all the symptom criteria for social anxiety. So it's very mild. But it's painful for people. Right down to I like to get together with another friend or two, but as soon as it gets to be more than a couple of people and we're sitting around talking but among ourselves, and it becomes a party, I don't want to go. And I hear things from, I'm not very good at that, to, I hate these things. And then I hear, my spouse makes me go. And it can cause a lot of anxiety, a lot of tension within yourself, which, of course, anxiety is not good for us. It can amp us up for other things. When you're super anxious about one thing, it doesn't make you more patient with your children or better at your job or a better driver. That anxiety bleeds onto everything else in your life. So it's a good idea that if you've got some social anxiety, to get ahead of it and treat it. And by the end of this show today, I want to teach you some behavioral techniques for it. I've got somebody who's going to talk to you about the medical aspects of it. And this is going to be cool, you guys, because you're going to be able to make yourself more functional. Let me give you an example of how separation or social anxiety can affect a relationship. And I'm going to give you one from my own family. My dad was brilliant. He was a mathematical genius. He was an electrical engineer, and he hated doing anything social. And my mom used to call him a stick in the mud. Now, my mom was very social. She loved going to places, and she loved cooking, and she loved having people over. And my dad would grumble and hate it and often refuse to go or grudgingly go, and she called him a stick in the mud. So for a lot of their 63 years of marriage, my mom did stuff alone or dragged him, which wasn't pretty, when he'd go. And one of the ways my dad would cope with going and having to do social things is that he would drink, and he would drink too much. Now, he was falling down, stumbling drunk, but as soon as he was enough glasses of wine or enough beers down for him to feel comfortable, what he would do is he'd kind of corner somebody and have some intellectual talk with them, and they couldn't get away from him. So my mom and I and my family would kind of be watching for that, and then we'd go rescue the person that my dad had kind of cornered and was having an intellectual mathematical engineering discussion with, and the person was wide-eyed with, how do I get out of here? It was embarrassing, and I felt bad for him, and I watched my mom in total embarrassment. So that was my dad's social anxiety. He didn't want to go be chatty with people, and so it affected him and my mom. My mom did a lot of stuff by herself. It affected us as his family, because as soon as he started that kind of behavior, we were all on guard for how do you basically get dad off of cornering that person about having some boring intellectual discussion. So that's just a mild example, too. Look at how it affects marriages. Think of the Christmas party you have to go to now, and your spouse doesn't want to, and your spouse starts drinking at home because that's going to help them get out the door and face going and being chatty with all your office mates. So that affects marriages. It affects your social standing in terms of your office expects you to show up and to be pleasant. And so I can tell you, alcohol as a coping mechanism for social anxiety is really, really dumb. It doesn't work. And I tell people all the time, don't use alcohol to cope with your office party. It will not end well. And people have taken my advice on that. Others have not, by the way. And it's not pretty. Okay, so look at this spectrum of social anxiety. All the way from a little bit of fear. And the fear surrounding social anxiety is fear of judgment. I'm going to be stupid. I'm going to stutter. I'm not going to know what to say. I won't be dressed correctly. I'm going to blush. Or I'm going to look. It's going to be obvious that I'm nervous and upset. I'll go blank. I won't know what to say. And then they start worrying. Then they do anticipatory anxiety because they know the office party's coming up in a month, 2 weeks, tomorrow, tonight. Oh, my gosh. And it's hard on them. So they start looping with, oh, how's this going to be? How's it going to be? So social anxiety is a part of generalized anxiety disorder. But generalized anxiety is usually more pervasive. People with generalized anxiety, and they're anxious about everything across the board usually. People with social anxiety are often just fine everywhere else, but they have social anxiety when it comes to going out and being in groups of people. There's a subset of it kind of that's part of generalized anxiety, and that's performance anxiety, which is different than social anxiety. Performance anxiety is when you're going to go do something, public speaking, play music in front of people, I have to get up on stage and do the toast, you're the best man at a wedding and you're just sweating bullets, you've got to be the one to get up and talk. So that performance anxiety can be part of social anxiety. But I know people with performance anxiety that have no social anxiety. And I know people with social anxiety that can get up and talk to a room full of people, but put them in front of three or four other people where they have to be personable and engage, and that creates anxiety for them. So the coping skills we're going to give you on this can go for any of this stuff. The idea is for you to begin to hold on to the idea of what it is you have. And I don't mean hold on to it like never let it go and heal it. I mean begin to understand it. So if you've got this fear of judgment and the worry and anticipating failing somehow, that's something for you to listen to the show and see if you can begin to understand how to treat this differently. Some of the physical symptoms of social anxiety are increased heart rate, kind of trembling and nervous, anxiety like breathing, shallow, dizziness, nausea. There's a fear of strangers sometimes. There's difficulty making eye contact. Some people have a social anxiety where it's a fear of using a public restroom. And that can be a phobia, or it can be something as mild as, oh, I'm just uncomfortable. So put it on the spectrum. Where do you fall? All the way from very mild to very severe. Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, I'm going to teach you some more about social anxiety.
Do you have a friend that won't shut up about crypto? Are you interested but don't know where to go? What is Web3? How does it affect me? Who benefits from DeFi? Is one crypto best? Why? There's so much to know. Get answers with Tokens Radio Show. Connect with us on Telegram at t.me/tokensradioshow or tokensradioshow.com.
Sunday afternoons from 2 to 3.
Greetings to my fellow veterans. This is Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of Veterans Affairs for the state of California. I'm a Korean vet, and it's my honor to serve in the U.S. Army as a new immigrant to this great country. Thank you for your service. It will not be forgotten. It should be remembered that freedom is not free. It has been secured by brave sacrifice that all members of our military and their families have given since the beginning of a great, wonderful nation. Thank you for your service.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and you're listening to the beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis. He's an incredible flute player. He's been playing since he was 4 years old. And he's Cherokee native, speaks fluent Cherokee, has won tons of awards for his flute playing. He's played all over the world. He's played on the stage with the Prague Symphony and with the Knoxville Symphony. He's amazing. You can listen to his music at randymcginnis.com. Or on Spotify, Pandora, CD Baby, Amazon, iTunes, all those places. He's got 6 CDs and they're all different. Thank you, Randy, for allowing us to use your music on this show because I think it helps people relax. And we're talking about social anxiety. All right, I want to give you another example because I hear so many, especially this time of year. This holiday time of year is kind of like, it's party time of year, it's gathering time of year, and people aren't real thrilled about that, that have social anxiety. One that I heard just the other day is somebody said, I have to go to kind of a black tie party. It's a fundraiser type thing, there's going to be a lot of influential people there, and I've got to go for my work, and I don't have anything to wear. And that was part of, she was also feeling what I call the F and U's, the fat and uglies. So I don't look like some of those, she had everybody else, all the rich people in the skinny, expensive dress, they're going to look like a $1 million and I'm going to look like the fat, ugly, frumpy peasant. It's kind of a summation of what she told me. In fact, she was kind of cute about it. We were laughing. But she's also anxious about it because she said, I don't have money to buy some $400 or $500 dress, and I'd look like garbage in it anyway. I don't want to. And she had examples like, I go and get my dress shoes at Payless Shoe Source, okay? I don't have super expensive, flashy high heels, and I can't wear high heels. And she just was going on and on. And a lot of her anxiety about going to the party didn't have to do with talking to other people. It was that she was fearful of being judged and found lacking, and that she was going to look like the poor person in the midst of royalty. So we talked about the anxiety. We took it away from how she was going to dress to how did she feel about herself and her own self-esteem, and it was a really good session. And then we talked about ways that she could handle going to this party without having a humongo anxiety attack. And I'm going to be teaching you some of those things of how you can actually deal with it, social anxiety on a physical realm. And then I'm going to give you some behavioral techniques that will help you begin to do social anxiety differently. So let's talk about another thing I hear a lot at this time of year, this time in our state of our country. People have a lot of anxiety about getting embroiled in political discussions, especially during family events. Many people have family members that are across the board in their political beliefs or their vaccination or not vaccination or how they believe in COVID or not COVID or should kids wear masks or not masks, then they know that their families feel very differently. And they are afraid of getting embroiled in a political discussion. So they have a lot of anxiety about that. Then there are people who are just anxious about getting together with their family. Either they've got somebody in their family who has abused them. It's not unusual for me to say, every year I have to face Uncle whatever, and he's the one who molested me when I was a kid. And I've never told anybody, and I don't want to tell anybody, but sometimes I even have to sit next to him at the table, even though I try not to, and I hate it. And so they have a lot of anxiety about facing some fear that they don't want to deal with. Also, there's fear of being judged. Many people will say to me, somebody in my family has to comment on whether I've gained or lost weight. Somebody will say, oh, glad you dressed up because I wore my jeans. Somebody's going to judge how my hair, my makeup, my weight, my jeans, how I'm dressed, whether I wore a shirt and tie. They're going to judge something, and I hate that. And then I either have to fight or I have to ignore it, and I don't know what to do. So sometimes in therapy, what we'll do is we'll play that out. Tell me how it's going to go down. And then we do, it's a type of therapy where you become the other people. So I say, okay, I'm going to be you, and I want you to be Uncle So-and-so. Tell me, say the things that you're afraid Uncle So-and-so is going to say. And we role play it out, and we look at ways to handle it. So the idea of social anxiety is we have preconceived ideas of what's going to go down. We are worried that the things we fear and the things that are going to bite us are there. There are monsters in the closet, and we know it. That's what happens with social anxiety. And so we start saying, gosh, what if there is a monster in the closet? I can't do this. And you start thinking, I just don't want to go. I don't want to go. Oh, gosh, okay, I'll go. Fine, I'll go. But I'm only going for a few minutes. I'm leaving as soon as I can. Maybe I can get a headache. Now, wait, if I actually say I have to throw up, and I might really have to throw up, I can tell them I'm sick. Oh, no, wait, then everybody's going to be super scared I have COVID. Oh, I got to go. Oh, I don't want to stay. This is kind of the dialogue I hear because I make people tell me what's in their head. And it's scary, you guys. It can be really scary what's in people's heads. But I make them tell me because that's the silent dialogue that they don't say out loud. All right, so part of social anxiety sometimes is saying all the things you're afraid of. Now, I'm going to teach you how to do the fear ladder, which I teach on a lot of different things. You say to yourself, okay, if I go to the office Christmas party, what am I afraid of? Okay, I'm afraid if I go, I'm not going to be dressed as nicely as everybody else. I'm afraid that I'm going to say stupid stuff. I'm afraid I'm going to blush. I know it's not smart to drink enough to make myself feel good, but I'm afraid I'm going to drink too much and mess up my job. So those are all things I'm worried about. And I say, okay, if any of those things happen, what are you afraid of? Oh, gosh. I'm afraid I'm going to look stupid. I'm afraid I'm going to affect my job. I'm afraid I'm going to lose respect from coworkers or my boss. Okay, and if that happens, what are you afraid will happen? I won't get that promotion that I've been going for. Or I'll be seen as less than. Or I'll get subtly and quietly pushed to the bottom. I just don't want that to happen. It'd be better if I just didn't go and risk any of this. Okay, so you're afraid of being ostracized and judged. You're afraid you're going to do bad things and do the wrong thing. You're afraid you're going to lose respect. Yes. So that's a big theme here. You're afraid you're going to lose respect. So can you see how we go down the fear ladder to isolate what exactly are you afraid of? And fear of judgment, fear of lack of respect, fear of doing something stupid and suffering a loss, like the loss of your job or the loss of a paycheck or the loss of a promotion. Those are all things that you're afraid of. And they can build from a tiny little inkling of what if to a huge, there's a monster in the closet and I know it. Okay? So get it that this anxiety can totally take on a life of its own and build huge, like a snowball rolling downhill until it's an avalanche, and you feel powerless. So we're going to talk about treatment. And there are different ways that you can help this. The very first one that I'm talking to you about right now is awareness. We can't fix anything unless you are aware there's a problem. So when you say, I'm afraid to do things that are social, and figure it out. I can do one or two or three people. I can do a small party of four or five people and sit around and laugh and talk and have a good time. But as soon as it turns into a party with people I don't know, or all my coworkers' spouses, or 25 people or 50 people or gasp 200 people, I just don't want to go. It's overwhelming. That's when you have to stop and say, what'll happen? One of the really important coping skills is to say, if I'm at a party with 200 people, and I kind of narrow myself down a little bit to sitting at a table and talking to four or five people, what's the difference? You've narrowed your target people you're being social with to a very small group, and you don't have to think of dealing with 200 people at once. But our brain says there's way too many people in this room. Way too many people are judging me and telling me I'm lacking, and I just want to go home. So are there reasons to deal with social anxiety other than just staying home and blowing it off? Yes. For your partner, because maybe your spouse has to go to the office party. For your kids, because maybe it's important that you go listen to their play that they're doing at school, or their performance, their music performance. Because maybe it's your child's wedding and you should be there. Okay? You're following me. Sometimes things are important. Sometimes you can beg off and not have to go because it's not that important. And sometimes it is very important. And your absence will be hugely noted and it will affect your relationships. So it's important that you stop and look at, do I have social anxiety? And then look at that spectrum. Is it very mild? Or is it big and huge, and it debilitates me so that I can barely function? So the other question I want you to ask yourself is, how often does this happen? Is it only with my family? Is it only with big gatherings of people I don't know? Where can I expect to have social anxiety? And where can I expect for myself to do fairly well? That's important, because how severe it is going to make a difference in how you treat this. If you go into your medical doctor and say, hey, I get anxious when I have to do social stuff, they might say, well, don't, or just breathe, or do something like that. But I'll tell you, the treatment that does not work, never in the history of the world has somebody relaxed or calmed down because somebody said, relax, calm down. So you tell a person with social anxiety, oh, come on, nothing's going to happen. You'll be fine. You look great. Not going to happen. It doesn't work, okay? I saw a meme on Facebook the other day where it said, hey, if your wife is hysterical and ranting and raving, tell her to calm down and she instantly will. I really started laughing out loud. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's going to work. Well, it works the same way with people with anxiety. Okay? All right, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I have a special guest with expertise that is going to help you understand the medical help that's possibly available for your social anxiety. We'll be back in a minute.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 14.
Hello, I'm Shannon Phillips with the McConnell Foundation.
It's that time of year again when family and friends gather together to celebrate the holidays. It's also a time to give thanks to Shasta County's 13,000 servicemen and women and their families. Thank you, KCNR, for supporting veterans in our community. Peace, hope, and joy to all this holiday season.
Happy holidays from Redding Electric Utility, your community-owned electric utility for 100 years. On behalf of all REU employees, we are wishing you a safe and happy holiday season. Please remember, holiday safety starts with you. Never overload an extension cord or electrical circuit. Make sure extension cords and lights are rated for outdoor use. And remember never to expose electrical outlets or connections to rain. Redding Electric Utility has been honored to serve you in 2021 and wishes you and your family a happy and healthy new year.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 14. 60.com.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty. We're talking about social anxiety, and it's painful for people that have it. It's mildly disturbing when you have mild social anxiety, and it can be absolutely debilitating if you have extreme social anxiety. So here in the studio with me is a dear friend of mine, and also is so generous with his time. I drag him down to the studio often to talk about medical issues. I have medical doctor, Dr. Richard Malacki. Say hello.
Good morning, Dr. Patty.
Good morning, Dr. Malacki. Dr. Malacki is one of the best diagnosticians and family physicians, general physician that I have ever met in terms of he's patient, he's kind, he's an incredible diagnostician. And so I said to him, people really need to know the medical aspect of social anxiety, because sometimes when it's super mild, I can give people behavioral changes and coping skills, and I'm going to give you some more of those, and they do well. And then sometimes it's bad enough that it affects their job, it affects their marriage, it's making them an alcoholic or a druggie, and they need medical help. So, Dr. Malacki, how often do you see patients come in and say they have social anxiety? Are they just anxious?
So the general category of anxiety, it's every day, and for 36 years of private practice. And social anxiety, I'm sure I talk about it once a week. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, I have a bunch of little canned speeches, but it is debilitating, and it kind of, the physiology of anxiety goes back to this thing that most people have heard of, what we call the fight or flight response. And the fight or flight response is probably because it was a genetic advantage or an evolutionary advantage to run away from danger.
Mm-hmm.
You're out picking bananas 50,000 years ago and having a great morning and come back with your family to your cave and there's a saber-toothed tiger waiting for you. You either run like hell, fight like hell, or faint.
Right.
And,
or freeze and just stare at them.
Yeah. But the ones who fainted always did the best, because the tiger ate the slowest runner, you know, and so while he's eating the slowest runner, you come too and say, oh yeah, I'm still alive. And then you go climb a tree and you're okay. So that is hardwired into all of us. And, I usually explain it, in a kind of a bad way, but it's about trigger pull. So some people have a 10-pound trigger pull on that fight or flight response, and you can put a T-Rex in front of them and they'll ask you for another cup of coffee. And some people will have a half a pound trigger pull, and just the slightest little breath will send them into or trigger their fight or flight response. And the physiology of it comes from this nerve. It's a really wonderful, cool nerve called the vagus nerve. It's 10th cranial nerve. And it's a single nerve that comes out of two paired structures in our brain called the amygdala, which we have one in each hemisphere. It's a sometimes as small as a filbert in the sociopaths, and sometimes it's as big as a walnut in people who, anyway, you know all that. So anyway, it's really cool how it works. So when you're in the chest at surgery, it's stuck like a piano wire to the outside of the esophagus, and it gives branches to the diaphragm and to the heart and to the lungs, to the stomach, to the small and large intestine, and a big old branch goes to this sits on top of each of our kidneys called the adrenal gland. And the adrenal gland, if the vagus nerve is strongly stimulated, releases adrenaline. Mm-hmm. and epinephrine and norepinephrine. And those compounds in the bloodstream make your heart rate speed up, make your breathing speed up, make you sweat, make your eyes, make your pupils dilate, they generate the anxiety and fear response. And again, it's all shades of gray. Some people have it real mild. Some people have it quite dramatic. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, understanding that, I think sometimes helps people realize that when they get these anxiety responses, it's not their fault. It's hardwired into their body. It's a survival.
And some of it's genetic.
Oh, definitely. You know? Oh, yeah, yeah.
The other thing I see, and you can speak to this if I'm accurate here, is I see people that basically train their bodies to go there really fast. They do it over and over again. So as soon as they feel the least little bit of anxiety, their adrenals kick in. They start feeling all the physical symptoms, and they get really good at going there very quickly.
Yes.
I call it brain training. You train your brain, your body, how to respond to your fear.
And there is physiology associated with that, too, because the analogy I like to use, because I grew up in Minnesota, it's like if you're going to go sledding, the first time you go down the hill in your sled, you go kind of slow because your sled is making a track.
Mm-hmm.
And it's smoothing out, you know, the snow packs down under it. But by the time you make your fifth run, you're hauling. You know, you're just flying down that hill. And so our nerves work that way, too. The more a nerve is fired, the more the brain thinks the nerve should be used. And the heavier the insulation is on that nerve, more insulation on the nerve carries a nerve signal easier with less effort.
Mm-hmm. That is actually the philosophy we use to utilize EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing. We want to get onto that grooved neural pathway.
Exactly.
And create other neural pathways, other sled runs.
Yeah, it increases the fatty layer around your nerve is called myelin, and mm-hmm. the more heavily myelinated your nerves are, the less stimulus they need to fire.
Exactly. So you train your body.
Correct.
How to get there. Okay, so one of the things I tell people when they have social anxiety on a constant basis, and it's pretty debilitating for them, is talk to your medical doctor about this. Now, their medical doctor has to listen, and they probably need more than 3 minutes of an appointment. But,
always.
Yeah. But there are medications that can help. Sometimes I have clients get on SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or antidepressants. But one of the things I want you to speak to is how using a beta blocker, even a low-dose beta blocker, like propranolol or something like that, on a limited basis, when you're going to be doing something anxiety-provoking, like your office party or going to the family barbecue or the family Christmas dinner, how do you see that working for social anxiety?
Well, so given that we talked about adrenaline and sort of laid that groundwork on the physiology, my go-to drug, if I need to prescribe something when the problem is so debilitating that patients can't just close their eyes and take some deep breaths for a couple of minutes and settle down, beta blockers are great because they block the physiologic effects of adrenaline. Adrenaline is a beta agonist, we call it. It stimulates beta receptors in the brain and in the body. So if you're heavily beta blocked or if you just take a beta blocker, you can't get your heart rate up. Won't happen. The vagus nerve can't start yelling at your adrenals to make more adrenaline. If it makes more adrenaline, the adrenaline won't work. And we also have lots of beta receptors in our brain and in the amygdala, in the part of our brain that's in charge of fear and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes for Especially instead of benzodiazepines like
Xanax,
yeah,
and all that, yeah.
Ativan, Librium, Valium, clonazepam. Yeah, instead of those drugs, I usually go with the beta blockade. And if someone has generalized anxiety disorder, I'll just say, hey, just take it every day.
Mm-hmm.
If they have normal blood pressure, it's classically, if you Google beta blockers, that the drug was developed for control of high blood pressure, which is often partly mediated by adrenaline. So, but most people with normal blood pressure on a low dose beta blocker will not make their blood pressure go too low,
mm-hmm.
because you don't want to give the poor person side effects. But it's an awesome choice because it doesn't sedate them or make them, it doesn't turn them into the Valley of the Dolls
looking that, stoned at their office party.
Yeah, you know, they don't want that because then they're not on top of their game. So,
or they're stoned at their office party and then they drink a glass of wine.
Oh, and then it's trouble.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you're doing a lap dance on the boss's lap.
Yeah. Or you're ripping off your top on the coffee
table.
And,
yeah.
And everybody's taking video and putting it on Facebook.
Right.
Okay.
It's hard to live that down the next day.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I like those drugs. Even sometimes, calcium channels blockers will sometimes work also. If people have, you know, don't like the beta blockade, sometimes beta blockers make people feel slow or tired.
Yeah. I've never seen that on people that take a low dose. Like when I work with people who have performance anxiety for either public speaking or playing, often I work with musicians who are afraid to go play. 10 or 15 milligrams, 20 milligrams of propranolol, which is a beta blocker, half an hour before they play, just drops that anxiety because their body doesn't read it as fight or flight. Their heart rate calms down just a little. Their breathing goes down just a little. Their vagus nerve calms down just a little. And it's enough for you to not wind up because your body's reading it as, oh, everything must be okay.
Well, and it does. It prevents the snowball because what happens with adrenaline is the worse it gets, the worse it gets.
Yes.
And by the time the snowball's at the bottom of the mountain, it's the size of a house. And it knocks you right off your feet. So, yeah, so that's for a prescription medicine, that's my normal go-to.
And I like that better than an SSRI antidepressant that you have to take regularly and all the time for something that could be treated only when you're faced with it. Now, Dr. Malachi is saying if you have generalized anxiety and you're constantly anxious and you're constantly stressing yourself and kicking out adrenaline and your body is struggling with the stress of anxiety, it might be important for you to be on an SSRI, on an antidepressant. Or there's other antidepressants that block other things besides serotonin uptake. So you have to talk to your doctor about which one is best for you. You can't just make that decision yourself. You need someone who knows what they're doing. So the other piece that I want you to get, this is a little bit of a side note, is when you're flooding your body constantly with adrenaline and cortisol, those are short-term memory destroyers. So if part of you feels like you're going into some kind of dementia or Alzheimer's and you're constantly dealing with anxiety, or when you're dealing with anxiety, all of a sudden you can't remember what you said or what you promised or whatever, that you could be blocking some of your brain's ability to do memory by flooding it with adrenaline.
Yes, especially with short-term memory. And the classic of that, which, I worked in the ER for 7 years, and the classic of that is, you know, people who've been in a very scary or physically harmful situation, they can't remember any detail at all.
Right.
You know, how did it happen? What happened next? What preceded that?
Yeah, what did the offender look like?
When that phrase, your mind goes blank, it's, yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so yeah, it's our brains don't like that stuff.
It's too much. Well, it goes back to caveman days.
Yeah.
How do you not get eaten by the saber-toothed tiger?
Correct.
You flood your body with adrenaline.
Yeah.
And so, okay, this is good. All right, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, Dr. Malachi and I both are going to give you some coping skills that you can use to handle your social anxiety this holiday season and maybe hopefully way into the future. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn.
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Turn your someday into today. The Shasta College spring semester begins January 19th, and now's the time to register for classes. First-time, full-time students, get your first 2 years tuition-free. At Shasta College, we'll teach you the skills, give you the knowledge, and provide the training you need to unlock your potential. Reskill, upskill, or get transfer-ready at Shasta College. Go to www.shastacollege.edu/apply.
I love that. That's me playing didgeridoo. Jared knows that I love that, my producer. Okay, this is Dr. Patty, and welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. We are talking about social anxiety, and here in the studio with me is Dr. Richard Malachi, a physician who is so good at treating this kind of stuff. So one thing that we were talking about at the break, and I want to make sure I said to my listeners to be careful with, is the benzodiazepines. And benzos are like Xanax, okay, clonazepam. Those are the ones we hear about a lot. And so people get, with anxiety, get used to using, usually Xanax, but not always, to manage their anxiety. And so it is such a recipe for disaster in a bunch of ways. They're addictive. You build tolerance, so it used to be that a quarter of a Xanax or half a Xanax would take the edge off your anxiety and you could go to the party and be okay. Now you're taking a whole Xanax because you've been doing it for so long. One of the dangers is people don't always manage their life very well when they have a benzo in them. You can get a DUI. You add alcohol to a benzo, and that can go way bad.
Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster. And I would just like to, you know, have an editorial comment about addiction. If you get addicted to any drug, a benzodiazepine or a narcotic or any drug, if you get addicted to it, it's your doctor's fault.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. It's your doctor's fault. And, you know, I'm way careful about prescribing. You know, people get, Patty's describing tolerance. So people get tolerance if they take it every day, and pretty soon one pill doesn't do it, now they need two. And then if the doctor keeps giving them more and more pills, it's the doctor's fault.
So, right. Now, it's the doctor's fault if the patient is being honest with the doctor. But I can't tell you how many people I've had that go to urgent care and talk them into a prescription of Xanax, or go to you and you're treating it well and you think they're only getting one prescription a year and they have 20 left and they've got five prescriptions.
And that's a lot less common than it was 10, 12 years ago, because now there's a shared database with all the pharmacists. It's harder for patients to doctor shop.
Right. They have to get it on the street, which is not impossible for people.
No, and unfortunately, unfortunately, the street drugs now that are available are just incredibly awful.
Yeah, and they can be laced with fentanyl, too, which kills you.
100,000
so
last year.
That's just the careful of the addiction part of this.
Right. But
those of you that have been coping with your anxiety using benzodiazepines, it is probably time for you to consider doing something that's healthier for you, and not something that's not going to bite you in the butt at the wrong time and cost you your job or your marriage or your relationship or your respect in your children's school or something like that. Okay, so one of the things that Dr. Malatke was talking to you about is that really important vagus nerve that really controls so much of your autonomic nervous systems, like your heartbeat and your breathing and the things that your body doesn't usually have to think about to do. And that vagus nerve, when it's overstimulated, can create those things to do a lot of what they do real hard, which then makes you feel like the saber-toothed tiger is coming, or there's a monster in the closet. So Dr. Malatke, who studied in India for a while too, which I think is really cool, he'll talk to you about his India experience sometime, learned some really cool meditative techniques. And this is one of them that he's taught on my show before, but I really want you to teach people your vagus breathing technique that really truly does relax you.
Hey, no problem. In fact, it's been, it's been used in India for many thousands of years. So it turns out that same anatomy we were talking about, the vagus nerve, you can see it in the operating room. You can see it like a piano wire stuck on the esophagus. Above the diaphragm, we've got our heart and lungs, and below the diaphragm, we've got all our guts and our stomach. And there's one hole in the diaphragm, which is just a, 3/8 inch thick sheet of muscle. There's a hole in it where the esophagus goes through. The slow breathe, deep breathe meditation, a lot of physiologists think that the reason why it helps calm you is it's physically massaging that vagus nerve. So slow breathe, deep breathe meditation is what I do when I have to do the only part of my job that I still don't like, when I have to go in the exam room and tell someone they've got something that I can't fix. And I still don't like that.
A terminal illness.
I'm telling people they're going to die, and I have to do that a few times every year, and I don't like it. So I sit in my office with my eyes closed, and I try to breathe in for 10 seconds and breathe out for 10 seconds. And when I first started doing it, I literally counted or looked at my watch. You got to peek one eye open, but it's 3 breaths a minute. And if I do that for 5 minutes, I can go in that room and do my job. If I can't, I usually cry worse than they do. So, yeah, I'm totally helpless.
No, you're just a big softie.
It's awful. So, I've done it so many times, you'd think I'd be pretty good at it. I was better at it when I worked in the ER and I didn't know the people. But, so that's a really good way to calm down, physiologically. It's massaging your vagus nerve, and, slow breathe, deep breathe, has other health benefits for you too. For instance, I usually talk with all my anxiety patients about how they're just such a lousy breather.
Lower O2 levels.
Well, they don't know how to breathe.
People
don't know how to breathe. You know, we are able to measure the amount of the volume of air you move when you take a deep breath in. It's called your tidal volume. And I've been doing this since I was in India, since I was 21. So it's I have a huge tidal volume. I move a lot of air.
Yeah. And I do because I'm a musician.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to be able to control your breath.
When I play didgeridoo or flute, I have to breathe really deeply. I can hold a note for 12 measures, which people can't always do because
an editorial comment, the didgeridoo that Patty plays is twice as big as she is.
It's true.
But anyway, so learning how to breathe, and people go, well, gee, I mean, I breathe, I'm breathing all the time. I know how to breathe. And no, you don't. Most people do not know how to breathe. They do not know how to fill their lungs. They do not know how to empty their lungs. And,
it's important.
Yes.
And I want to just quickly, because I want to give you some coping skills, other ones. I often hear after people have listened to my show, my podcast, Dr. Patricia Bay, Therapy in a Nutshell podcast, and Dr. Malatke's been on there, and they say, I just can't do that vagus breathing thing he talks about, because they can't do 10 seconds in and 10 seconds out. Work your way up to it.
Yeah,
I don't care if you can only do three.
Yeah, start with 3 seconds.
And then work your way up to it. So that's what I tell them, is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Work your way up to it. Okay, so some of the other coping skills that I want you to think of when you're looking at social anxiety is you need to have a repertoire of things to talk about. You need a few subjects that you're really comfortable with. You need some opening greetings of how you say hello to somebody, and you practice those. You have some subject changers. Like, for example, if somebody wants to have a big old political discussion with me at a party, I might look at them and go, whoa, this is not a good place to start a political discussion. It could get really bad really quickly. And they usually go, well, yeah, I know, but. And I'm like, okay, we're not doing a political discussion. Now, I'm more assertive. You can always have that at hand ready for you. You can even say, hey, I'm not comfortable having a political discussion in this setting. And then change the subject. You'll almost that, how about those Niners? You know, change it. Start talking about sports. Start talking about your kids. Have a subject changer like, hey, are you all ready for Christmas? That's a really good one right now. Everybody asks that question.
Exactly.
And have those on the tip of your tongue. Also, your opening greetings. Hi, how you doing? It's so good to see you. Okay. Also, don't overdo the alcohol. It does not make you better. You think that it's going to relax you and make you more social and comfortable. And there's a point where that might be true, and it quickly passes. All right?
Very quickly.
Very quickly passes. And it passes with five more sips of that beer or another half a glass of wine. All right, so opening greetings, comfortable subjects that you like to talk about, subject changers when somebody's talking about something that makes you very uncomfortable, and don't overdo the alcohol, and don't go stoned on a benzo.
My go-to subject changer now is I whip out my phone, I start showing pictures of my grandkids.
Oh, yeah.
I got them.
Yeah.
It's all over.
Okay. Yeah, they'll walk away. Yeah, I have probably 4,000 pictures of my grandkids on my phone, and they're my favorite pictures of
correct.
All.
So, of course.
And here's what's interesting. When you don't know what to talk about, ask them a question about them. If you're a good listener, and you're saying, hey, how's work going, or, you know, how are your grandkids? How many do you have now? Or, you know, you have a daughter, right? What's she doing these days? People love to talk about their kids and their grandkids. Ask them questions.
And people, I think, sometimes think, oh, that's small talk. No, it's not. That's not small talk. That's important talk.
It's personable.
Yes.
And it's personal.
Yes. Yeah. You're engaged.
Yeah, and it might be that you don't know anything about grandkids. And you might say, someday I hope to have grandkids, and it sounds like they're just a joy in your life. Have a few lines that let you engage and let you talk to the other person about what they love to talk about. Because people love to talk about themselves, you guys. They just do.
Yep.
And they will leave your company going, oh, she's just awesome. Or he's the best listener I've ever had. And they have no idea that you've got some anxiety going. All right. The other thing is get into some therapy and talk about the underlying cause of your social anxiety. It's really important to help really eliminate it from your life. If you've got low self-esteem, or you have been constantly judged by the way you were raised, or you have a very critical parent, if you have someone in your family that you just dread seeing at the holidays because you're going to get judged, go and work on those issues.
Yeah, 90% of that iceberg is under the water.
Yeah. Go and fix it. Talk about it. Reframe it and learn how to deal with it from a different angle. And it's not about, oh, let's talk about your childhood. That's not really how good therapy works. It's like, what causes your social anxiety? Let's get to the bottom of it. Let's see if we can reframe this and alleviate that from your repertoire of what you need to be afraid of. So it's really cool, you guys, to work on core issues in your life and heal them and get rid of the behaviors that just aren't fitting in your life. Okay, so I want you to remember, go back through and listen to this show. You can get it on my podcast, Dr. Patricia Bay, Therapy in a Nutshell podcast. It's on iTunes, Spotify, every podcast forum that's out there. And I want you to say, nothing's wrong with me because I struggle with this. It could be genetic, it could be training for you over a long time, but it doesn't mean you have to live with it forever. This is so treatable. You don't have to live with social anxiety forever, okay? So I want you to remember there's coping skills. If it is persistent enough and you deal with it enough and it's really scary for you, talk to your doctor about possibly getting a low dose of a beta blocker like propranolol. Okay, that's the name of it, propranolol. I've had clients go to their medical doctor and say, hey, Dr. Patty told me about propranolol, and because it's such a low dose and they know it's not going to harm you, they're really willing to help you try that. They are much less willing to give you a prescription for Xanax. Thank heavens, I don't want them to most of the time. But something like propranolol, most of them will go, well, I've never heard of that, but okay, can't hurt you. And that's pretty cool. So there is help. You don't, and you're not alone. So many people have social anxiety. So I want to thank Dr. Richard Malachy for joining us here today. Thank you for your time and your expertise.
You're welcome, Dr. Patty.
This is Dr. Patricia Bay, Dr. Patty, and you've been listening to Therapy in a Nutshell, where I just want to help heal the world 1 hour at a time.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.